Hi, I'm KALW News Director Ben Trefney, and I want to let you know that we are in our spring membership drive. So I want to invite you to support KALW. We are listener-supported radio, and so we're asking for your help right now. Please go to the website and click Donate Now. It's at kalw.org. You'll feel good about it, and we will too. Thanks.
KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in San Ramon.
Larkspur in Marin County.
Simpson Beach.
I live in Noe Valley in Novato.
I live in San Anselmo right next to Fairfax.
Coming up, Oakland day laborers talk about the dangers they face on the job.
He visto cómo se cortan los dedos.
He says, I've seen day laborers cut their fingers on lawnmowers and chainsaws, and I know people who've died in work-related car accidents. Then we meet the Marvel writer who created a comic book character to reflect her world.
I just wanted to, like, write a giggly, goofy story.
And a sound from another era in this week's Audiograph.
Big whistle, everybody! Watch your ears!
What's that sound, and where is it from? Find out today on Cross Currents. California has some of the toughest workplace safety laws in the country, but that doesn't mean people don't get hurt. Hundreds of Californians are killed at their jobs every year in preventable accidents, and Latino workers are more likely to die at work than anyone else. KALW's Teresa Katsarillas reports immigrant workers can be particularly at risk.
Abel Salcida Quinones, Amber Clark.
Jora Trang is speaking to a small crowd in Oakland's Frankagawa Plaza in the middle of a makeshift altar. She's with the labor rights organization WorkSafe. Dozens of framed photographs are propped up on the plaza steps, portraits of Californians who've died at work in the past 2 years.
In 2017, we lost 376 workers. That's more than one worker a day.
There's the tree trimmer who fell from a 30-foot sycamore, the construction worker buried by a collapsing wall, and the Uber driver who was killed when a van drove the wrong way up Highway 101.
Have you ever been hurt on the job?
Yes, I have.
Anthony Nuanez stopped by in his lunch break to pay his respects. He's a member of the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades.
So we're in the construction industry, walking under scaffolds, walking on top of scaffolds, being around open wires. When I first started, hard hats weren't mandatory. I mean, let's see, where's
He points to the twin towers of Oakland's courthouse.
Okay, so I worked on that in the 80s. We were in tennis shoes, or there was nobody telling you to put on your safety glasses.
These days, Anthony says, employers are required to provide safety trainings. Construction companies also have to keep first aid kits on hand and provide workers with a certain amount of shade and water to prevent heat stroke.
It has improved a lot over the years.
But if you're a non-union worker, like a day laborer...
They definitely rob from them with the underground economy, paying them cash and stuff like that. Not paying into their workman's comp. If they do get injured, they're on their own. You know, nobody cares about them as much. And it ain't right.
Es muy duro. Al fin de todas las cosas, es un trabajo honrado.
Mario Pina recently started his own landscaping business. But before that, he was an hornalero, or day laborer, waiting on a street corner to be picked up for jobs. The work's tough, he says, but it's honorable, and it's been a game changer for his family in Mexico.
Ahora tengo mis hijos profesionistas.
He's put all three of his sons through college. One is an engineer in graphic design, another's an architect. Anthony, the construction worker, told me he didn't personally know anyone killed on the job. Mario can think of plenty of people. I saw someone fall out of a tree he was trimming, he says. When the ambulance arrived, they announced him dead at the scene.
Es un temor tan grande.
I trim trees too, Mario says, so it was terrifying to go back to work the next day. It's hard to work psychologically.
He visto cómo se cortan los dedos.
He says, I've seen day laborers cut their fingers on lawnmowers and chainsaws, and I know people who've died in work-related car accidents. In 2007, about half of all workers killed on the job in California were Latino. Latinos are overrepresented in construction, landscaping, manufacturing, dangerous blue-collar jobs. And throughout the U.S., the majority of Latinos killed on the job are also immigrants. A lot of newcomers just don't know what their rights are. And according to both Cal OSHA officials and day laborer advocates I talked to, most day laborers aren't given safety trainings on the equipment they're asked to operate. Mario finds this really frustrating.
Yo fui militar.
I was in the Mexican military, he says. It took them 6 months to train me on those guns because they knew I'd get killed if I wasn't trained. Why should training on these machines be any different?
Porque automáticamente me mandan a entregarme a mí a que me maten si no llevo un entrenamiento.
Mario says that day laborers need to know what their rights are and insist that their employers adhere to Cal OSHA regulations. Studies suggest that unionized workers suffer fewer workplace fatalities than non-unionized workers. But while some low-wage immigrant workers do join unions, some day laborers are afraid that employers could use their immigration status to retaliate against them if they organize too publicly. According to day labor organizers, other workers face language barriers or can't afford the union dues. On May 1st, International Workers' Day, Mario heads over to the Oakland Workers Collective to eat a sandwich lunch and practice chants for an afternoon protest.
El pueblo unido jamás será vencido.
A crowd of day laborers, domestic workers, and community activists are decorating neon protest signs at a fold-out table. Day laborer centers like this one connect workers with organizations that ensure their safety. We walk together to Fruitvale Station and take BART to Frank Agawa Plaza.
Go do some good work up there.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
This time, the plaza is crowded. Aztec dancers are performing next to picnicking families, and this one guy's handing out communist newsletters to a Brazilian capoeira troupe. Activists are making bilingual speeches about labor rights and immigration. Mario is waving a Mexican flag. He marches in this protest every year, and he hopes one day it won't be necessary. In Oakland, I'm Teresa Kotsarilis for Cross Currents.
Teresa is KALW's immigration reporter. You can reach her at immigration@KALW.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. While growing up in the Bronx, writer Gabby Rivera would sit at her grandmother's dining table, listening to stories from her sheroes, the women in her family. Gabby infused elements from her own life into America Chavez, Marvel Comics' first queer Latina superhero, with her own series. And she's bringing more stories about Latinx identity and the LGBTQ community to other projects. KALW's Janae Darden sat down and geeked out with Gabby Rivera.
First, my dad's mom just was like the matriarch on my dad's side of the family. She was always so well put together. She ran her own businesses. She taught herself English. She worked her way up from cleaning washerwoman to like head teacher at a school. Like, my grandma was it, okay? And around her table, it was almost like a royal table, you know? She always had it set. She always had it ready. And it was always my aunts, my titis, my grandma, and like my mom and everybody gathered and telling stories and telling big stories, you know, about how they were taking on the neighborhood and who messed with them at work and what their plans for, what this man did to them, what they were going to do about it, you know. But there was always so much power, and they were always so animated and so vibrant and full of life. And I would just sit there quiet as the day, you know, hoping that they wouldn't tell me to go clean something, you know, and just be in awe listening to them.
And you absorb that.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. How could you not? Also, like, little nerdy me wasn't running outside playing, you know? Like, I was inside, like, reading and just trying to have fun in my own little quiet way. And so being a part of that and listening to them was what I aspired to be. I wanted to be like them. I wanted to hold court like that and have everyone listening and sharing at my own table one day. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which has come.
Oh, my goodness.
To be.
Yeah. A little bit.
So, and I was also listening to your TED Talk, which was really, really, really good. And you said you didn't feel powerful when you were growing up. Why?
Oh, my goodness. I mean, I didn't feel very powerful. I got picked on a lot. I feel like a lot of people got picked on a lot, but I got picked on a lot in middle school and elementary school, you know, chubby woman, girl, you know, whatever, like not fitting in, tomboy. Also, I grew up in a very, like, strict religious household, Pentecostal, Protestant, evangelical, and so I was just scared of a lot. I was scared of the evil and the demons everywhere, right? And I was scared of breaking rules and disobeying my parents, and I was scared of not being the perfect Latina daughter.
I'm hearing some of the things you're talking about growing up, and I'm thinking about your YA novel, Juliet Takes a Breath, right? And those were some of the issues that she was dealing with. And
totally.
I know it shows the complexities of love and being both queer and Latina. And what did you want to show in this book that you think isn't shown enough with stories and images about being queer and Latinx?
Well, number one, I just wanted to, like, write a giggly, goofy story about a girl that kind of, like, loves herself but isn't sure what the heck is going on with her identity and what she wants to, can she be a feminist, can she be a lesbian, all these things. I wanted a goofy, nerdy story. Mm-hmm. I definitely don't think that we see that enough in media in general, unless it's, like, white guy nerds or something like that, you know, then there's room. But I just wanted something funny and soft and gentle and honest, right? And I also wanted a story about a Latina lesbian who is, one, just a regular person, and two, came from a place of support, right? Like, her parents, her mom has a weird time with it, but there's still love there. She doesn't just get thrust and thrown away. She isn't discarded. She's kept. I also wanted a story that where the identity or the sexual orientation isn't the trauma, you know, where it isn't like the source of this immense pain, where it's something fun and exciting.
So when you got the call, what was that like? What is that like when Marvel calls you and say, hey, we want you to write?
Well, it was an email.
Okay, when you got the email.
And it was all, like, encrypted. So, of course, I thought it was spam or, like, a virus. And I opened it and it was like, hello, we have read Juliet. Would you ever want to write for Marvel? Will. Like, super short.
So it's all S.H.I.E.L.D. even when it's...
Literally. You must enter the passcode.
So
you know,
like, what?
But it was wild. It was wild. It was wild. Like, take the elevator all the way down from my job's, like, 30th floor to the street in Manhattan on the phone with my mom, like, mommy, Marvel called me. And then my mom being like, ay, Charlie, Marvel, llamó a Gabby, ay. And then her screaming for, like, 40 minutes and me being like, hello? Hello, mom?
Right, right.
But yeah, like, and that is one of, like, their dreams, too, because my parents are, I think a lot of folks of color have old school, nerdy, sci-fi parents.
What was the difference for you writing a novel versus writing comics? Were the challenges different?
Gosh.
Like, just the, or just even the writing process?
I never, ever in my life thought I was going to write a comic. Like, I don't draw, I didn't even read a lot of comics growing up. That's something I do more now. And so basically, Will and Sarah Brunstad at Marvel taught me how to write a comic. That first issue of America is my first ever anything, my first ever comic. I had to learn how to write for panels, how to utilize panels in a way to tell a story, how to let one image tell a story, one line of dialogue. Like, it's a totally different and beautiful genre. And learning that, having that professional development from Marvel was a dream come true.
I wish this explosion happened when we were kids. But, right. I mean, but it's happened. Why do you think now this is happening?
Well, it's interesting, right? Because Black Panther has been around since, what, the 60s, right? And so it has taken this long, like an entire generation of a culture to be mm-hmm. built for Black Panther, right? So I think it's like an explosion now, but also it has been cooking in that oven for a minute, you know? And so I think there's a similar vibe there with America Chavez where people just want stories that reflect the world around them.
Yeah.
And they want stories. I want stories with women. I want stories with Black, Indigenous people of color. I want stories with people that have identities I haven't even thought of yet. Mm-hmm. I want to see it all. And I think that, like, there's more folks that have more privilege and more power that are also fighting for those stories and for that diversity.
And I know you face backlash.
Oh, yes.
you faced
my cackle. I did. Oh, my goodness. It was so wild and unexpected and hurtful. And it almost made me not want to write comics anymore.
Oh, no.
Yeah. There's a whole slew of folks. I'm not going to mention any ads or names or websites.
Yeah, don't.
But there's a whole team of folks that made it their business to tear down everything that I did with America, make videos of it, a whole other team of folks that scoured the internet for my personal information to put it on websites and tell their followers to harass me. Mm-hmm. And just imagine, like, every negative thought you've ever had about yourself mm-hmm. being said by other people on the internet. And so it really crushed me and scared me. And I'm glad that I have a supportive team in place, because when I was fearful for my personal safety, my roommates came through, and I lived in a Black and brown queer house. And the second I was like, I feel like I'm in danger, my roommates came home. They brought the troops with them. We sat and we held space in my apartment. They went with me to file the police reports. My agents at New Leaf Literary got on the horn with Disney and Marvel to get whatever legal protection I needed. And it was just like,
that's ridiculous that you needed all of that. Because of a comic book.
Yeah. A comic book that is, like, pretty goofy and loving.
Right.
And it's a little wacky, like, but I feel like that's what comics should be. Back to that dinner table, grandmas. America doesn't have a grandma. Let's get her a grandma. Mm-hmm. A strong luchador grandma. And let's set her up in all these ways so that she can have fun, learn about herself, and be supported by all of the in all these different ways.
If America ever got a movie, who would you want to play her?
Oh my goodness. Listen, I regularly get Latina actresses sending me pictures of themselves
really?
As America Chavez, being like, when the time comes. I remember when they made the movie Selena, and they ultimately chose Jennifer Lopez, but they also had, like, a nationwide search.
Right, I remember that, too.
Yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing that as a kid, thinking that was so cool. And so I think that would have to be the thing for America Chavez.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's put it out into the world and have America, like, show up and be just a regular girl from around the way, you know?
That was writer Gabby Rivera of the Marvel Comics series America, speaking with KLW's Janae Darden. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Next up, it's Audiograph, the Bay Area's sonic signature. On Thursdays, we bring you the sounds that tell the stories of where you live and the people who live there with you. This next one is from our archives by reporter Sarah Tan.
I'm not trapped in a train engine right now, but it sure feels like I could be. I'm surrounded by large gears, metal pistons, and billowing clouds of hot, wet steam. Tucked away in a warehouse behind a metal scrapyard is Kinetic Steamworks, It's an industrial space for people to tinker with old machines in West Oakland. A mishmash group of engineers, artists, and hobbyists gather here every weekend to bring back the lost art of steam power. In the 19th century, steam was used to power boats, trains, pretty much anything that could be run by a pulley and a wheel. But by the early 20th century, it fell out of use in favor of diesel fuel, which was cheaper and more efficient. But it's still used in some places. Steamworks member Troy Welch tells me,
"Now steam is happening in power plants. You just don't see it. They're giant steam turbines, and they're still what makes, you know, most of this country go."
In fact, over 90% of electricity generated in power plants is created using steam power.
Steam is part of our history, whether or not, you know, America recognizes it or not.
Troy says their group was founded as a way to get more people excited about working with steam power.
But the demographics, unfortunately, you see a lot of these guys, a lot of them are getting older, a lot of them are passing away. You know, the founders sort of wanted something different than that. They didn't want an old steam group. They wanted something where you could engage younger people and artists. And so they said, let's do something unique. Let's take steam and mix it with art.
And so in 2005, Kinetic Steamworks was born.
And then next thing you know, everybody was sort of hooked on steam.
That's Steven Rademacher, a plumber by day and weekend steam enthusiast.
That's very leaky.
Why is it leaking? Should we get a wrench on it or something?
Today, Steven and Troy are working on the group's main steam engine.
We call this engine Roy. And it's been a real runner for us.
Roy's about 5 feet tall. He's got two long, thin metal pipes curving around the top that draw steam in and let water out. At the base is a metal wheel, and above that, a couple metal gears and pistons pump furiously. Roy is used as a power source. They'll hook his steam-powered wheel up to gears that might turn a pencil sharpener, or power a vibrating couch, or play keys on a piano. There are lots of projects people work on here, but the biggest one, a fully restored steam-powered printing press. It's the size of a small boat.
My grandfather used to work on the railroad back in the day, so I've always had a love of mechanical things.
Member Marcia Hurst is a nurse during the day, but she says she's always been passionate about machines and figuring out why they work, which is why she joined Kinetic Steamworks 6 years ago.
I'm kind of an amateur artist, so that kind of, I can contribute sometimes with artwork. And then I also have one of these presses.
For her, Kinetic Steamworks is like science and art coming together. She's helped refurbish an old printing press, and now she uses the press to make prints.
Yellow, magenta, cyan, and black.
Marcia says it's important that people can see the engines with all their parts moving, something you can't always do with other machines like your iPhone or computer.
I think there's something really powerful and great about understanding exactly how something works. And I also think it inspires people to maybe be a little more creative and realize we've gone from this to what we have now. You know, that there's so many possibilities of what you can do.
So members really see steam power not just as nostalgia for the past, but as inspiration for the future. Which is why Steven Rademacher says,
"We're not steampunks, we're steam dorks."
No top hats, goggles, or any other Victorian clothing here.
There's a big difference between the fashion craze of steampunk and our existence as steam dorks.
Steampunk is all right, he says, but steam dorks? They get the wheels turning. In West Oakland, I'm Sarah Tan for Cross Currents.
That story first aired in August 2017. You can catch Kinetic Steamworks at the next Maker Faire. That's in San Mateo from May 17th through the 19th. Find that information at kalw.org. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.